Welcome to Canadian Politique. I'm Cameron Bishop.
I'm Leanne Goodman.
I'm Mike McDougall.
And today on the show, we're going to be talking about the shooting at the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh, the ongoing, brutalization, but it's just a downward trend in political rhetoric here in Canada, and stories of the week. But Leanne and Mike, I have a special clip from last week to follow up on our chat that we were talking about the bomb scares, or I guess the bombs being sent to the former presidents and a number of other
right.
folks who were critical.
The one that Mike thought was a false flag.
Right.
That's not what I said. That
well, anyway,
not.
let's hear the clip and then we'll come back to it. So go ahead.
This particular situation I find to be very weird. And what I mean by that is there's no, if you look at who's targeted, some of it's really obvious, but some of it's also very, there's no pattern to it, right? Like, I mean, Robert De Niro's. Like,
yeah, because like, Robert De Niro said that he thinks Trump's a shitbag.
And, okay, fair enough. Robert De Niro may have said that.
And
but
he's a big critic. Remember his whole fuck Trump thing?
I understand that, but why not Alec Baldwin or why not Bernie Sanders or why? Like, I just think that there's a weird pattern to this. And it's also kind of weird that none of these bombs have blown up. I'm not saying, I'm just saying that I find this story to be developing. It's hard to comment on a developing story because I don't think it's as simple as some random weirdo just sent a bunch of bombs to people that they don't like that make fun of Trump. I think that that narrative has been constructed by the explanation of what we're seeing right now, but it's ongoing. And this doesn't pass, you know, 1 + 2 doesn't equal 3 on this for some reason. And I kind of feel weird about it.
Hmm. Well, Mr. Jones, Alex Jones, do you want to comment on that?
I'm going to double down. No, I'm doubling down on it because at the time with the information we had, it was still weird. It's still weird. The guy's a fucking weirdo. He's like this weirdo that Michael Moore had a bunch of footage of, which I watched, which is kind of interesting. But at the end of the day, there was no pattern to it. Like, it didn't make sense. It still doesn't make sense.
Of course it makes sense.
It doesn't make sense.
We know now it was a random guy, random weirdo to use.
Trump lover, a MAGA guy, the
mega I'm not saying it's not him. It clearly was him, but it still doesn't make any sense. Like, it doesn't make sense.
Well,
it's not a very good criminal.
Because he's crazy. Is that why it doesn't make sense?
It doesn't make sense. Like, what he did makes absolutely no sense.
Well,
and I think you guys are the ones that said I'm saying it was a false flag. I wasn't saying it was a false flag. What I was saying is, whenever something's developing, whenever there's a breaking news story, at the time we recorded it, we were in the middle of it happening and everyone had opinions on it. And all I was trying to say is, hey, everybody, we don't actually really know what's happening right now. All we know is that there's bombs being sent. That's all we know. And that's what I said.
Right. You were sober and responsible. Yes, I understand I understand your defense of yourself on this. When you're urging people to be cautious and not jump to any conclusions.
That's exactly. And I would say when you read, I'm going to get down to too much in the weeds there, but you can't judge the past on information that you know in the future. That's what I'm going to say.
Yes, that's a very good expression. However, nothing any crazy person does makes sense. And obviously, it's a lunatic, right? Like, what makes sense? And here's the segue into our next dreadful topic. What makes sense about that guy who shows up at the synagogue and blows a bunch of people away because he believes some bullshit about Honduran refugees coming to the Jews?
Yeah.
Because the Jews are trying to wipe out white people. Like, what? Like, nothing any crazy person does ever makes sense to those of us who are not insane.
Well, of course.
So, whatever, Mike.
Whatever. I'll eat it. I'll take it. We're going to play back all the clips that Cameron says about how good the Bushes are.
Hey, I'll say it again. They're a fantastic family.
Really?
I would be very... I'm a very big fan of President George H.W. and George W.
Oh, really? Are you really loving that he convinced people to vote for Kavanaugh?
No, I am not.
I
was broken inside.
In this threesome, I'm the only one that you guys can't come back and say, well, you were fucked up about that. So,
really?
No, I wasn't, really,
I'm attracted to Mitt Romney's kids, and I've always had a soft spot for Mitt Romney.
Yeah,
he's going door to door to try and get Republican turnout up in Utah.
The thing is, folks, I don't
care. Thanks, Leanne.
My comment wasn't wrong at the time. It wasn't. You guys were just busy to jump. You guys were just jumping on. It wasn't. Let's do a poll then. Facebook poll. I'm setting it up right now. Online.
You go right ahead.
I just want to point out that the one woman in this panel has rarely screwed up. Okay, let's go on to the next terrible topic.
Yes, let's. Since we've been laughing, now's the time to put a pin in the balloon and talk about the October 27th killing of 11 Jewish people at the Tree of Life Synagogue by a man whose name is not going to be said on this pod because I don't think he deserves the courtesy of having his name said. But this man went in with an AR-15, an AR-15 being, of course, the gun that has been used in the last something like 20 school shootings or shootings or mass shootings that have happened in the United States, opened fire on individuals celebrating Shabbat and a bris, killed 11 people, injured 7. He has been charged with 29 federal crimes, 36 state crimes, which include 11 counts of criminal homicide, 6 counts of aggravated assault, 6 counts of attempted criminal homicide, and 13 counts of ethnic intimidation. He... if last week's weirdo with the bomb scare was motivated primarily because he thought Donald Trump was a victim and that that people should be taking action to take out those who Trump has deemed an enemy of the state or the people, this guy seems to be motivated by the fact that Trump has not gone far enough. He's an individual who
He didn't hate the Jews enough.
No, that's right. He said he's posted content that is anti-Semitic, neo-Nazi, Holocaust denying. He has criticized Trump for being, quote, a globalist, not a nationalist, and apparently being controlled and surrounded by Jews. In another post, this gentleman said there is no make America great as long as there is a kike infestation. Other posts that the suspect has put up have attacked African-American with racial slurs and images related to lynching and attacked women who have relationships with black men. He's also used his online accounts to post, of course, conspiracy theories regarding investor and philanthropist George Soros, who is another target of the guy, or was another target, rather, of the bombing suspect from last week, and is a favorite pinata for the right and alt-right who like to blame billionaire George Soros, who is a Holocaust survivor, I should add, for every ill that has befallen their side at any time in the last 20 or 30 years. So what do you think, folks? Because we have a president who has called himself, or we do, the United States has a president who has called himself a nationalist, but apparently not soon enough for this guy who went in and blew away 11 lives, injuring 7 and destroying so many more.
Well, it's really hard to know what to say. I mean, okay, so this guy wasn't a Trump fan, but we all saw those guys marching through Charlottesville with their tiki torches chanting, "The Jews will not replace us," right?
That's right.
Who he then later said, "There's some very fine people." So, you know, you can... did you see the really brain-dead thing he had to say the other day about, well, why did Obama not get blamed for the guy who shot up the black church?
Like, yeah, yeah.
How stupid are you? Why would the first African-American president be blamed for a white guy going in and shooting up an African-American church? I don't, like, how is it in any way comparable?
It isn't. And ironically, by the way, Nikki Haley, who's his outgoing UN ambassador, the former governor of South Carolina, when you mentioned that stuff that happened in Charleston, I believe it was the church where that white supremacist came in and shot up the church and killed a number of African-Americans. It was actually during the primary season. And Nikki Haley said that at the time that she wished that Trump would tone down his rhetoric, because that kind of rhetoric was causing issues like in Charleston. And then, of course, this week, she said that nobody should be blaming Donald Trump because nobody blamed Barack Obama after the shootings either at Charleston. Well, except, Nikki, you blamed Trump for his rhetoric then, but apparently his rhetoric now, which is a million times worse and a million times magnified, doesn't qualify now to be blamed. Does not compute. Mike, what do you think?
Well, I mean, anti-Semitism has been a cancer on world history for over 1,000 years now, and it never goes away. Unfortunately, it can certainly lay dormant in certain areas for a little while, but you know, for reasons that I personally cannot even begin to wrap my head around, it does come up. Just 2 days ago, the Kentucky Expo Center was holding a gun show, and people snapped photographs at the Kentucky Expo Center. So like their version of, you know, the Toronto Congress Center, they were selling guns, but also they had KKK paraphernalia and Nazi paraphernalia for sale, and not, you know, historical Nazi stuff that some collectors like to buy, where there is a market for people that want to buy like war souvenirs from veterans from World War II just because they're collectors. But I'm talking like t-shirts with swastikas on them, right? Like new t-shirts that have swastikas on them. And because of an outcry, the CEO of the Kentucky Expo Center has said, okay, well, we're going to tighten our vendors up and not allow that to happen again. But it happened, right? And, you know, blaming the Jewish people on anything is nothing new, and that's extremely unfortunate. And it's just hate, you know. Did Donald Trump cause anti-Semitism in America? No, he absolutely did not. But it's almost like there's a safe space for people that do hate to come out. I was listening to The Daily last week, and they were talking about this guy. I don't even know his name that shot up the synagogue. I don't want to repeat his name even if I knew it. But the platform that he had to kind of espew his hatred was this social media app called Gab.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like Twitter. And it's interesting because it's almost like a, you know, the reason Gab exists is because Twitter and Facebook did a concentrated effort to remove hate speech from their sites. So like this guy is barred from Twitter. And apparently guys like Richard Spencer and guys like, you know, like hate leaders in America have kind of migrated to this app Gab that calls itself a free speech app. And look, I'm going to be the first person to say, if you're one of those people that thinks that in 2018 you have to defend free speech, then you're probably a racist.
Yeah.
Actually, you are a racist. I mean, that's the only free speech that people are trying to limit nowadays, right? So racists have all flocked to this Gab app, and now it is this putrid. I mean, at least, and this point isn't mine, this is a point that I heard someone else make, but at least when hate speech was on Twitter had a lot of, every time someone would post something racist, like thousands of people would respond, you know, to saying like, who the hell do you think you are? That's wrong. On Gab, they don't, because that's where all the loonies go, right? So,
yeah.
You know, this guy had a platform to talk to people that agreed with him. And this does exist in America, and it exists in Canada. And it just won't go away. And it's a fucking disgrace.
It is.
That's all I can really say about it.
No, it is. It is exactly that. And you know, you think about all the people who are vilified, you know, in the Muslim community, for example. And who was the first ones that came out in Pittsburgh was the head of the Muslim, the Islamic community, and they said, if you need us to come and guard your services while you are in there doing your services, we will come and do that for you, to the survivors of the synagogue. But the point is that this is not something that should continue to be going on after everything we have seen throughout history. I mean, we have 6 million dead Jews during the Second World War that Eisenhower demanded be cataloged because he wanted to ensure against those that would deny it later. He wanted to ensure that there was proof of the very depths of inhumanity. And yet here we are in 2018, and we, you know, Jewish people are being targeted, Muslim people are being targeted, African Americans. I mean, you talk about a safe space, Mike, you're absolutely right. I mean, whether or not, I mean, and I believe Trump knows exactly what he's doing. I believe that he uses words like globalist, which is another way of saying that the Jews are controlling the world. That has been some old canard that the alt-right and the wing nuts and the neo-Nazi movement have used for years. He's embracing this idea of nationalism. But nationalism is very different, I think, as I've been reading and as I understand it. Nationalism, the way that Trump and his cohorts espouse it, is not patriotism. the nationalism they espouse and what is giving that safe space or the fuel to those who would support them is this idea that their views of nationalism is, as Merriam-Webster's dictionary would say, is placing a primary emphasis on the promotion of one culture and interests as opposed to those of other nations or supranational groups. That's what Trump's nationalism has given rise to. That's what the embrace of nationalism is. You can be a patriot. I don't think anybody denies being patriot. But if your version of patriotism is picking up an AR-15 and going into a mosque and shooting a bunch of Jewish people, some of whom are Holocaust survivors or synagogue.
A Holocaust survivor.
Or a Holocaust survivor.
97-year-old Holocaust survivor.
That's right. Or going into a mosque or going into an African-American church or screaming about refugees that are coming to your country for a better life. If that's your version of patriotism, you are a fucking racist. And your patriotism has
crazy.
No place in
you're
a civilized.
Insane.
Yeah, your patriotism has no place in a civilized world. Now, before we continue, two clips. One, I want you to hear Trump at a rally that happened 5 days before the shooting. And then I want you to hear Iowa Congressman Steve King, who is possibly going to be defeated, thank God, in the election next Tuesday. He has a long time been a racist, a foaming at the mouth bigot. And people in the Iowa 4th District have apparently allowed him to continue this supranationalist viewpoint and to carry it to Congress. Well, it might be, hopefully, knock on wood, that the district that he won was 61%. Apparently, people are just pissed off enough because of what's been going on from his mouth and his beliefs that they may be sending him packing. But I want to listen to these two clips and we'll come back and finish talking. So first is the president.
A globalist is a person that wants the globe to do well, frankly, not caring about our country so much. And you know what? We can't have that. You know, they have a word. It sort of became old-fashioned. It's called a nationalist. And I say, really, we're not supposed to use that word. You know what I am? I'm a nationalist, okay? I'm a nationalist.
Tonight, the committee charged with electing House Republicans is condemning one of their own, speaking out against Republican Congressman Steve King, who on Saturday reportedly told the Washington Post members of an Austrian group with historical ties to Nazis, quote, would be Republicans if they lived in the U.S. The Republican congressional campaign chairman today blasting King's comments, calling them completely inappropriate, tweeting, "We must stand up against white supremacy and hate in all forms." This also comes after King last night tweeted this picture from his annual pheasant hunt, saying different breeds of dogs indicated diversity.
Across
King is known
America
for inflammatory rhetoric.
With the deaths of thousands who have been killed at the hands of illegal aliens in America.
In the past, he has refused to delete retweets of neo-Nazi sympathizers.
I'm not deleting that because then you all pile on me and say King had to apologize, he was wrong, he knows he's guilty. I'm not. I don't feel guilty one bit. I'm human.
Now King is hitting back at the media and his own party, writing, their ultimate goal is to flip the House and impeach Donald Trump. Establishment never Trumpers are complicit. Defiant, even as companies like Intel and Lando Lakes, who've donated to him in the past, are now saying no more. Casey Hunt, NBC News, Des Moines, Iowa.
Yeah, so safe space, a safe space so safe that for many years he has been allowed to get into Congress over and over again. The guy was elected back in the 80s, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. But irrespective, I suppose we should all be encouraged by the fact that now a race that should have been his by about a 40-point margin is now neck and neck with his Democratic challenger. So, I mean, maybe people are getting tired of this. Maybe it's the bomb threats. Maybe it's a continual anger coming from the Oval Office. Maybe it's the shooting up the synagogue and killing so many innocents. I don't know what it is, but maybe the tide is turning. I'd like to think so, but I just don't believe it.
Well, I hope so. And, you know, I did a lot of traveling when I lived in the States. I did live in a little Democratic bubble, but I also traveled out a lot to, you know, the South and the Midwest. And Americans aren't as awful as Canadians think they are. Like, even Republican Americans, they're really not. And I know a lot of Republicans, conservative-leaning people in the United States who are absolutely horrified. So I want to think that they're showing up in the midterm elections. I don't understand why the polls don't have the Democrats completely kicking ass. But the thing is, obviously these people aren't patriots, but the blame really has to lie at Trump's feet. No, he didn't create anti-Semitism and racism, but he is stoking people who are mentally ill, mm-hmm, right?
Exactly.
He's inciting crazy people, and not just people, voters. He's also inciting and emboldening all of the people in his party who have harbored these views and have known that they were socially unacceptable. He's now made those views seem acceptable. So it is all at his feet. So all we can hope is that next week, they turn out in droves and kick these guys out, because it's terrifying. And we've talked about it 100 times and we're all sickened by it, but so are a lot of Americans. So
you're absolutely right, though, when you talk about conservative Americans. And I grew up in a conservative family, and look, my family is in no way, shape or form the same as hardcore Republican folks down in the States. And I use it and I think that you have to differentiate individuals who identify as Republicans. There are a lot of good individuals, wonderful people who are hardcore Republicans that believe in a philosophy of small government and low taxation. And that's completely fair. And unfortunately for these individuals in many states across the United States, their views have been perverted by a very vocal minority. But if you take that minority away, the simple reality is that these individuals would likely not see a Republican administration or Congress ever again, because demographics are changing greatly. And if you've somehow figured out a way to peel off this angry, nationalist, racist, anti-Semitic base, then these individuals would not be able to carry out the agenda that we've seen them trying to do in Congress. This is why people like Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan and others in the administration, including Mike Pence and many others, tolerate the kind of crap that comes out of Trump's mouth, because they know that without him and without that loud, nasty base of unemployed, toothless, racist motherfuckers, they would not be able to pass their tax cuts and limit the scope of government. That's the reality. They simply don't have the numbers. And so evangelicals throw themselves in with them. You know, people like friggin' fucking Franklin Graham, who's the biggest Pharisee walking this earth, they throw themselves in with the racist and they adopt the rhetoric because they know goddamn well that they won't be able to do a fucking thing if it isn't for these people that have their back.
Yeah, it's really disturbing.
It is very, very disturbing.
It's also weird that Trump keeps talking about the base as if he's still campaigning. He's the president of the United States. Everyone is his base. He doesn't understand that.
Well, he does understand it. I don't think he cares, I think, is the problem. Like the problem is that he only views himself through the lens of the people who voted for him. And the people that are the most animated that voted for him are the ones who are so animated and racist. Those are the ones that he plays with. You think that if the respectable Republicans came out and didn't respond to the way that he lays it out, he'd go out there every day and bang the drum the way that he does? Of course not. I don't think so. Maybe I'm wrong. What do I know?
It's really hard to know because he's insane, right? Yeah. Like, it's not just his supporters and horrible people in the party who have come out of their holes. He's insane. So,
but political discourse
we're
in itself.
Crazy, crazy times.
Political discourse has gone downhill. Right.
It has indeed.
And I believe that might be a segue to our next segment.
That's
what I was trying to do. That's
well
what I was trying
done.
To move you guys along.
Well done. I will say we are going to end the pod though today after we all say our goodbyes with just the newscast about the 11 people who were killed and just a little bit of a story about each of them. It's about 3 minutes. I thought it was on MSNBC. I thought it was
That's
really
nice.
Yeah, I think it was. I think sometimes you need to give a voice to these folks, even when they've been taken so tragically. So let's talk about our own political rhetoric here in Canada. And to start us off, I have a mashup of clips of, and look, this is not an exhaustive collection of clips. It is, a few that have been put together. Some of them recent, some of them past. But I just want us to listen and then talk about our own political rhetoric here in Canada. So let's roll.
We all know Justin Trudeau has failed. He's embarrassed Canada on the world stage. His irresponsible tweets have caused a crisis at our borders. He's imposing a carbon tax on Canadians that make us less competitive and do absolutely nothing to help the environment. In 1 year from now, we're going to have a chance to get Canada back on track. But the Liberals have got some stuff going for them. They've got academics who support them, and they've got the elite and the pundits who keep repeating the Liberal spin. What do Conservatives have? We have you. Canadians who love your country, who love your families, who work hard for your communities, and you just want the best for the people who are around you.
Nice hair, though.
I wish my country were a little better.
Yes, if only we could all be a little better, just like Michael. Ignatieff, he didn't come back for you.
Do you think it's easy to make priorities?
Leaders set priorities. Leaders get things done. Stéphane Dion is not a leader.
There's the Stephen Harper who wouldn't protect a woman's right to choose, who believes our Charter of Rights is fundamentally flawed, who'd have us fighting in Iraq, who said Paul Martin supported child pornography, who doesn't think it's the job of the Prime Minister to fix healthcare. And that's just the Stephen Harper we know so far. The question is, how much more don't we know? A message brought to you by the Liberal Party of Canada. Stephen Harper actually announced he wants to increase military presence in our cities. Canadian cities. Soldiers with guns. In our cities. In Canada. We did not make this up. Choose your Canada.
Actually, we did make that up.
Yeah,
never said it. But I wanted to play those clips. The first one, of course, the bright light that is Candace Bergen, who is one of the nastiest creatures that has ever crawled on Parliament Hill. With apologies to the mice and the rats that and the asbestos.
Wow.
Oh no, I can't stand her. But I want.
No, no, you've told me this before. You really don't like her.
I don't. But I look across the board. You know, nice hair though. That's kind of tame, but it's still there. The crap about Stéphane Dion not being a leader. There was also the website that the Tories did years ago with a puffin pooping on him as it flew by. This crap that's Candace Bergen and Andrew Scheer and Lisa Raitt and a lot of other folks say, which is, I mean, every second word out of their mouth is failed, 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 failed. Then you have them saying stuff like, you know, who do conservatives have? We have you, not people who are academics, pundits, or the elites. Okay, except those people are all legitimately Canadians. I don't know why it's such a tragedy to be educated and an academic with facts and evidence. But I get tired of also the insinuation that we hear in that thing that the first part, especially when they're talking about or when she's talking about people who care about their country, who work hard, as opposed to all the Liberal, NDP, Green supporters and those that don't like the Conservatives, who are just all fucking lazy, who hate their country. And I mean, I just get tired of this ginning it up. And I will be the first to admit that I am also a contributor to the political rhetoric. I believe we do have a responsibility, but I do believe that you know what? We can speak out about it as long as you're presenting the facts. And what we know that the Conservatives especially have done of late is they have not presented the facts. They are lying about almost everything that the Trudeau government has done. There is a way to oppose. It doesn't have to be continual lying and misleading Canadians and dealing down in the gutter. But at the same time, I look at the Liberal Party and we have done exactly the same thing. Or, you know, certainly those ads with Stephen Harper in the streets, although Stephen Harper did suggest in the 2004 campaign that Paul Martin supported child pornography. And that's probably part of the reason why he lost in that election. But I just see this like it's just a cauldron that is messy and it's getting worse and worse and worse. And now we have the Conservatives who have said this week that they're preparing to go to war with the media in this election. And both party leaders, Trudeau and Scheer, have also said, respectively, that they believe this the 2019 campaign is going to be the nastiest one ever. So I don't know how we change it. I mean, I like getting people pointing fingers at me and saying, well, you're too negative. Have you looked at what's going on with the people we actually pay a fucking salary to? up in Ottawa and how they behave. I mean, who among us would still have a job if that's how we behave to those we were supposed to work with?
Can I take a stab at this one?
Yes.
Yes.
So I think there's,
it's a false flag, isn't it, Mike?
Yes, it is. It is definitely it's all Hillary Clinton. No, we live in a society that is used to instant information. And what that has done is it's created kind of a culture of trolling, and it's also created a shorter attention span. So the only way to get people's attention now is to go above and beyond what you normally would do. But also, if you make a mistake, that comment will go away fast because something else will come up, right? It's why Trump keeps getting away with lying all the time, because if you keep lying, the media and people eventually will move on to the next lie and forget about the one that happened before. So in the past, when newspapers would come out and if a politician said something about another one, it'd be on the front page and it would be all anyone talked about for that whole day because that's the newspaper. Now you can tweet out a snarky, trolly comment, which a lot of people, because of social media, because of the internet, people are anonymously more cynical and they're anonymously ruder. And that's now carrying into everyday life, where if you hear a politician make fun of someone's hair, you'll laugh and walk away and think about something else. Where in the past, you might be like, what the hell? He just, like, why would he say that? And you'd spend more time thinking about it because you weren't bombarded with every piece of information that ever existed all day long. And that's kind of where my thoughts are on it, is that it's just the society we live in because of the amount of information that we have access to.
Leanne?
Yeah, I don't disagree. I think the explosion of social media has made everything worse, and you got to be louder and noisier and meaner and nastier for people to pay attention. And maybe in a way, then it just starts, people just start ignoring it. But, you know, it's not like political attack ads are new in Canada. Do you remember the one about the way Chrétien talked?
Yes.
And that was a long time ago. Yeah. That was 20, 25 years ago.
Is this the face of a prime minister? But then it gave Chrétien the opportunity to give the speech he's always wanted to make, right? About how God gave him a deformity. But he's not like a normal politician because he doesn't talk out of both sides of his mouth. He can only talk out of one.
That was awesome.
Yeah. We love him.
Right? It's like, part of me thinks we're being maybe a bit alarmist about the fact. I think the rhetoric has always been nasty when it's a high stakes election, and it's going to be, yes. And I agree, and I know that both Trudeau and Scheer have said this one's going to be nasty, but I agree with Mike. It's sort of the era that we're in, and I do think that a lot of people are starting to drown it out. Especially, I don't know if you guys saw that Pew study recently about how millennials or those under 50 are a lot better at assessing what's bullshit and what is real. Then it's the old folks that it works on, and you know they're dying out. I hate to be crass, but that generation is dying out. Everyone under 50 is much better at assessing fake news, at you know ignoring things that they know are bullshit, not getting sucked into conspiracy theories. It's an old person thing for the most part.
Of course, it is.
So, you know, I don't want to hasten the death of a generation, but I do think you're going to start seeing it, I hope, improve as a certain segment of the population shuffles off to
this mortal coil.
Yes, exactly.
Bob Dole, your ass is grass. That's what Leanne is saying. Bob Dole. I don't know why I felt the need to throw him in.
My problem is I always think the best of people. I always think that things are going to get better, and I'm constantly disappointed. So I wonder, how old am I going to have to be before I accept that the real world sucks and people are terrible?
Wait till you hit your 30s. Then you're going to realize it, Leanne.
Yeah, that's very sweet.
But honestly, here's what
I want. 130s?
No, I meant your 30s. You're 29 right now, aren't you?
Yeah.
Okay, so here's my question, though. You remember, has anybody seen lately how journalists have been piling on Michelle Rempel on Twitter because she literally blocks everybody. I'd like to say that Michelle Rempel does not block me, and I have been critical of her. So I don't know what everybody else, I mean, Canadians, apparently Canadians who challenge her, journalists who ask her questions, anybody that actually says something that is remotely offside, except for me, have been blocked. So perhaps she's just muted me, but it's a trend is blocked by Rempel. But I've also seen other, you know, I saw Lisa Raitt go after somebody on Twitter whose handle is Patty O'Limerick. And she is
Patty O'Limerick.
Yeah. But she's actually quite fantastic. Like she has a good following and she really goes after. But
what does she go after them for, a limerick?
No, that's just her somebody handle. Else. But she had gone after Lisa Raitt for something that had happened. I can't remember the context, but she'd gone after something. She had screen grabbed a tweet that Lisa Raitt had put in when she was transport minister and then said something, I guess, critical of it. This is years later. This is just recently. And Lisa Raitt threatened her with exposing her who she was. To everybody, to outing her essentially, and outing her as an anonymous troll, but outing her by name and who she worked with. And then she says, so this lady winds up posting the information that proved herself to be accurate about what Lisa had said. And Lisa Raitt just blocked her and hasn't apologized. And I'm not saying that, I mean, Aaron O'Toole has blocked me. Unfortunately, I wish he hadn't. I kind of like the guy. Tony Clement used to block me as well, but he unblocked me after I spoke with him directly. I guess I'd like to know
God,
what it is.
So childish. Just well, you actually
more than people about unblocking you on Twitter.
Well, yeah, because I'll tell you why. First of all, and the mayor of Ottawa, by the way, is renowned for blocking people. Okay. He blocked me and literally all I asked him was why Kanata couldn't get LRT. Why it was going to the East End before Kanata was in it, and he blocked me. He is the mayor of Ottawa. There was no swearing, no anything. But I guess my question is, you know, when we talk about political rhetoric, why should my rhetoric and yours be better than the politicians who are supposed to represent us? I'm not saying that there's never room for improvement, but why the hell does my rhetoric matter more and the way I treat people matter more than the people who are sitting in the House of Commons, one of 338 members or 442 parliamentarians? Why does my rhetoric matter more than theirs?
Well, it doesn't. They're just thin-skinned babies who can't take criticism. I find it really, really wrong that politicians just block people on Twitter. Like, we've done stories on it in the Conversation Canada. Like, you're an elected official, and just suck it up. Like, people have a right to tweet at you. Right?
Well,
but just ignore it. You don't know. You're not expected to answer every person, but why would you start blocking people for really innocuous stuff? It looks bad. They only make themselves.
I wouldn't even be on Twitter if I was a politician.
Why? It's a great way to access.
You know, they kind of, well, and they get their message out without having to go through the media and all that stuff, right? So I get why they're on it.
I'd have someone do it for me, but I wouldn't
And maybe Jim Watson does.
No, he doesn't. That's his thing. No. Jim Watson's big thing now. He's being taken to court. After years of promoting his Twitter feed on the City of Ottawa website, he now says it's his personal Twitter feed. But that guy's so full of shit, it's amazing it's not coming out his mouth. Because that guy is the only thing he's really done in 12 years of being our mayor, or I guess 10 years now, is open a lot of envelopes and go to bake sales with his ratty looking shoes and his ugly khakis. Seriously, I saw the man
what
walk.
Rhetoric? What yeah. nasty
here's,
rhetoric?
Here's some rhetoric. I got something I got to get off my chest before we move on this topic. So you know that my friend ran in Kanata North, and I did not rant about it last week during the pod, but I am going to say a little something this week, because again, I find myself appalled that the woman who is leaving office now, Marianne Wilkinson, I received a call from a lady in Ottawa that I consider my second mother. She lives literally, she's my best friend's mom. Her parents live about two blocks away from me, are the loveliest people you'll ever meet. They had a sign for Matt on the lawn. And we got a call. This lady, I'm not going to say her name, called me and said that these two individuals, my second grandparents, that had a sign from out on the lawn that Marianne came up the lawn just like she did in 2014 to other people, but we didn't have any direct kind of knowledge of it. She came up the lawn with Jenna Suds, who wound up winning, and as it was told to me, proceeded to launch into a vicious tirade about Matt's personality, his integrity, and his character. And that the more they tried to tell her to please stop because they weren't interested, that the more animated and angry she became. And all the while, Jenna Suds stood there and said nothing. Just stood there while this 80-year-old hag launched into a diatribe against a good person in this community. And I can't wait to hear exactly what was said, because they will be talking about that. But, you know, we talk about political rhetoric, and I know Karen McCrimmon was on the pod recently, and I know she's friends with Marianne Wilkinson, and she talks a lot about positive politics. And I remember when I saw her before the pod, she had said to me that she was very disappointed at how negative the 2014 campaign had been. And when I told her what Marianne had said then, which I won't repeat now, she said, well, I don't believe that, or I find that very hard to believe.
Nothing like being called a liar when you tell somebody something.
Yeah, when
that
we
happened,
had people
I
calling
hate
us,
that.
And
oh,
now
I don't believe
again.
That.
And now again, we have it again. And I will also say something that I posted last night. You want to talk about political rhetoric, lady, and you want to talk about positive politics, because for some reason we're getting a lot of hits in Kanata. So Marianne, if you listen to this pod and you would like to come and have a face-to-face with me in this studio, the offer is open, and I would welcome you to come with the same crap that you threw up at the doors about my friend. And I will do you one better. Not only can you sit in this studio face-to-face with me and answer why you're such an awful human being, because I know what kind of an individual you are, you can also do it in front of his kids, because you seem very unwilling to be an individual that will say things to people's face. So I'll tell you what, we'll actually bring Matt in here. You can be here and we'll bring his kids. And then you, the Grand Dame of Kanata, or as I like to call her, the Grand Demon, you can sit here and you can spread whatever lies and hatred and fob off on political rhetoric that you want, but you have to be held accountable for the way you have behaved, because you hurt good people and you demand something different from others. I'm sorry. That just rips me off.
Hey, Marianne.
Marianne, I haven't even been invited to go to this studio. So this is...
well, no. You know what? It would probably mean that our ratings would drop. Actually, I was going to address...
No,
a, well,
not
truly,
with Mike.
Not w- well, not with Mike. No, with Marianne.
Oh, Marianne.
Nobody wants to hear...
Marianne Wilkinson. Ginger's always a better draw.
I can always do an imitation. This is Marianne Wilkinson. I'm from Kanata, and I'm angry all
I'm
the
cutting,
time.
And I'm cutting Andy Shear's meat for his lunch.
Gumming it. But yeah, I actually, but all that to say, yes, I know political rhetoric can be bad. I guess my worry is that we're quickly becoming a place where people can say whatever they want, do whatever they want, and then people are not held accountable. And I find that people try more often to hold me accountable for what I say on this podcast than they do for politicians. And I am not being paid by anybody. This is something that this is something that I do for myself, and I'm held to a higher account sometimes than others. And I just find that I'm shocked, but I worry about where we're going here. I worry about where we're going, because if that's the case, then I worry about what's going to be the next government and the government after that and the government after that, as we continually debase each other and what we say. And as I say, I take responsibility. I try and tone it down. Marianne is an exceptional case, because I truly can't stand her, because I've seen how the hurt that she causes people. But I just don't understand why it is that we seem willingly to be sitting there. And maybe it's just like you said, Leanne, it's the older populations that are more susceptible to it. And because they're more likely to vote, that's probably why you see this ginned up so much. But it just strikes me as it's just a dangerous time, I think.
Mm-hmm. No, it certainly is. Are we going on to our best?
We are going on to stories of the week. And
although I feel like I just interrupted Mike, who is about to say something.
No, I'm just listening to Cameron.
Sorry, I had to get that rant out. It has been pent up years and months.
Yeah, we get that, Cameron. We're picking up what you're laying down on Marianne.
yes. So, Let's talk stories of the week. Mike, you get to go first.
So on following up Marianne, I just wanted to say, I don't know if y'all know this, but tomorrow Bob Dylan releases a record called More Blood, More Tracks. And it is all of the demos and B-sides from when he recorded Blood on the Tracks, which some people say is his best album. And I've heard an early release and it is awesome, and it is way better than the album that they actually released. So if you're not too busy being mad about Canada North politics,
Marianne, get,
yeah, Marianne was probably in her, you know, 70s when Bob Dylan was famous in the 60s, so she's going to get More Blood, More Tracks tomorrow. Listen, usually I try to come up with a local story to talk about, but I can't stop listening to this record. It is fantastic.
Is it political? Is he political? Are the lyrics political?
Well, Blood on the Tracks has like Tangled Up in Blue on it. It has Shelter from the Storm. It has, right? Mm-hmm. So it's a mid-career album from him. I mean, Blood on the Tracks, when I'd have to Google it. Let's say like 1971.
Okay,
so,
no worries.
Yeah,
okay.
Good album.
Wow. Well, since we're on an entertainment theme, I'm going to weigh in with my story of the week because, you know, it's heading into the weekend. Maybe you're thinking about going to a movie, and this isn't unusual for me when I hate the movie that everybody else loves, but may I urge you against seeing A Star Is Born.
It's that good, eh?
It's bad. First 45 minutes is good. She's great. But it is so implausible, and it just goes spectacularly off the rails 45 minutes in, where I was laughing when other people were sobbing. Like, by the time the bad thing happens, I was like, oh, please just do it. It was just so bad, and the whole world loves that movie, and it's going to win 100 Oscars, and I don't understand why. First 45 minutes is cute. Lady Gaga, love her. Great Netflix documentary on her, by the way, if you're into Lady Gaga. Skip A Star Is Born and watch the Lady Gaga documentary. It's much better than the movie. And if you really want to go see a good movie this weekend, go see Black Klansman, best movie I've seen.
Yes.
Oh, I can't wait to see that.
It was fantastic.
Oh my God, it's good.
Yeah, it really was.
Man, which is also really good.
The fact that he pulled one over, though, on David Duke. Anyway, you go see the movie. I won't spoil it.
The ending.
The ending is fantastic.
So,
but it is a true story.
And First Man was also awesome. But
yeah, that looks good.
Star Is Born. That's my tip.
Well, I will take us back away from entertainment here for a second and come back to something when we talk about pettiness and politics. And Lord knows I can certainly be a little bit. No. Adrian Clarkson.
Not Marianne again.
No. Adrian Clarkson, our former governor general, served for 6 years from 1999 to 2005, only the second woman to hold the post. But the first that was a minority Canadian, she was Chinese Canadian, came over here from Hong Kong as a child. She did a lot for the office. She was probably one of, if not the most active governors general, but she did have controversies that dogged her while she was in office. You know, people seem to always go after her on her expenses or what have you. I happen to think she was fantastic, but that's not the point. Well, I guess it is in the sense that, again, people are going after Adrian Clarkson's expenses because the government of Canada, the federal government, allows for former governors generals, former prime ministers and former Supreme Court justices to have, you know, bill a certain amount back to the government for expenses that they incur in exercising duties after they leave office. Adrian Clarkson owns the citizen or runs the Canadian Citizenship Foundation. She has been billing back about 100,000 plus annually to the government. I think this past year was 169. So naturally, the media has piled on Adrian Clarkson's expenses again at $169,000 a year. Anybody have a problem with our former governors generals? You know, the ones that actually wanted the job, unlike Julie Payette, and have seemed to enjoy it, billing Canadians for something when that's actually what they're allowed to do?
$169,000 in expenses seems like a lot, man. Sorry.
Relative to what?
Relative to what's her job right now?
She runs the Canadian Citizenship Foundation. She travels. She's the honorary colonel in chief of a regiment in Alberta. She does a lot of travel throughout Europe. She's got a lot of demands on her time and on her because she was so present. I mean, if we're talking Ed Schreier, I mean, I think the government is asking Ed Schreier to pay them back. Because Adrienne Clarkson, though, I feel like she just is the favorite kicking bag of people that want to take a round out on anything that has to do with politicians, current or former, who have the gall to serve their country and charge taxpayers anything. If you're not willing to do it for free, somehow it's wrong in Canada.
I agree with that sentiment, but
it's small town cheap.
Is this a media narrative where they keep calling her the former lieutenant governor or former governor general, and not, should they just be calling it her current job title and that would explain the expenses? Because to me, if I see former governor general, why would she have expenses that are more than most Canadian salaries?
Yeah, but she employs, right? This is for salaries, right? She employs individuals that she can bill back to help support her work, not only at the foundation, but as a former governor general. By virtue of the fact she's a former governor general, she's allowed to bill back. So
fair enough. I mean, I don't feel that strongly about it, but, you know, I mean, it is an easy punching bag. I mean, that's one way. If you want to talk about expenses, you can look at that and say, well, you know, former governor general, look at her expenses.
Leanne, what do you think?
I think we're too cheap, and I don't really have a big problem with it. It's not like it's $1 million, for God's sakes. Anyway, I don't have much of a problem with it.
Yeah, I would just add one other thing. Do you remember back when Adrienne Clarkson was governor general? And we're almost done the show here. She got it all the time. One time she got it for a $95,000 rug that she purchased in the ballroom. But no, the ball, that's not just
the size. The ballroom's the size of a gymnasium.
Right. Though. And it was $95,000. They're still using it. That was almost 20 years ago. And they pilloried her for having the gall to ask for a $95,000 rug because the other one had holes and stains on it. Like, we are so cheap as a country that this kind of crap makes news. And then we wonder why 24 Sussex is a shithole falling down around where...
Fix 24 Sussex.
And Harrington Lake, apparently. They say both of them are
and
in critical
bus.
Condition.
And the airplane.
Oh, yeah.
And the Airbus.
That thing's like 50, 40 years old.
We went on a good long rant about this in the summer, how cheap we are. Well, it's a Scottish heritage. I blame it on our... And I say that as a Scot.
Well, there you go.
We are very frugal people.
A Scot eating something right now. So, I mean, that's...
I am. I'm eating popcorn because we've been on this call for a long time.
I know. I got to go.
I love this podcast, but I haven't had lunch. I'm starving.
All right. Well, thank
all
you guys.
All this Marianne bigger.
Well,
got
listen,
me starving.
I have, let me leave you with one thing as we go off. And before I end the show, I want something. This is from Clue. And this is kind of what my rant about Marianne reminded me of from Mrs. White about Yvette.
Okay. Bye.
Goodbye.
I hated her so much. It flames on the side of my face, heaving breaths.
Yeah, heaving breaths of flames and a lot of other stuff when I think of that woman and how she hurts people. Okay, well, folks, that was the show today. This week, it was a little bit of some challenging topics, I think. But as always, good discussion. As always, too, you can always email us because we are always looking for your feedback. Some of you have been doing that, and we thank you. But to wrap up the show today, we're going to leave you with this clip from MSNBC talking about the fact, the stories, I guess, not so much the fact, the stories surrounding a number of these 11 people who were killed at the shooting at Tree of Life Synagogue on October the 27th. So it is a very good 2.5 minutes worth your time listening. And we will see you all next week. Thanks a lot.
Oftentimes after these mass shootings, we get caught up in the whys and the hows of what happened. But right now, for this second, for this moment, let's focus on the ones who lost their lives. Joyce Feinberg was 75. She was a mother of two sons and retired. A native of Toronto, she was a researcher at the University of Pittsburgh, described as, quote, magnificent, generous, and a caring human being. Dr. Richard Gottfried was 65 and ran his own dental practice with his wife. The two had just celebrated their 38th anniversary and were planning to retire soon. The doctor passed out toothbrushes instead of candy for Halloween.
Rose Malinger was 97 years old and had barely missed a service in decades. A fellow congregant called her full of life. Her daughter was injured in the shooting but is recovering. Jerry Rabinowitz was a family doctor who lost his life trying to help others at the synagogue. His nephew tells NBC News when Dr. Rabinowitz heard the shots, he ran outside to see if anyone was hurt, and that's when he was gunned down. His patients described him as being one of the few doctors who would take time to listen, understand, and empathize, even when he was busy.
David and Cecil Rosenthal were brothers in their 50s who had been attending the synagogue since they were boys. They had an intellectual disability, and when the synagogue held services for adults with disabilities, the two brothers served as honorary chairs.
They were known as stalwarts of that synagogue. Daniel Stein, 71 years old, he was spending his retirement traveling with his wife. According to a relative, his one-year-old grandson was the love of his life. Mr. Stein was killed in the same room where his grandson's bris was held earlier this year. Melvin Wax, known as Mel, was 88 years old. He was leading Shabbat services for New Light Congregation when he was killed. A family spokesperson says, quote, he was always available for a conversation or to tell a joke. He was a really bad joke teller, but he loved it.
Most people are really bad joke tellers. Irving Younger, age 69, was a regular greeter at Saturday services. A former Tree of Life president said he wouldn't be surprised if when the gunman walked into the room, Irv's first thought was, can I help this stranger?
Finally, Bernice and Sylvan Simon, a married couple in their mid-80s. They died in the same place they were married more than 60 years ago. A wedding announcement shows they married in 1956 in a candlelit ceremony at the Tree of Life Synagogue. It says Bernice wore an ivory Chantilly lace gown. A neighbor remembers them as a sweet, kind couple who always held hands.